Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we are talking food sustainability, which is, we've been a while talking about this in smaller podcasts, or it came up in podcasts for a minute or two, but we never really actually did like a full pod on it, Martin. It was something that we've been wanting to talk to
an expert. Absolutely, sure. The line gets trotted out. Sure, we can feed 50 million people, Tony. And, and it gets trotted out. And it's about time we had a little in-depth look at that.
Well, and the reason we're having that in-depth look is because one of the authors, the lead author actually, of the report, the new report to assess Ireland's role in creating sustainable and fair global food systems, is joining us. And that's Sinead Moulds, who's, as I said, the lead author and also an independent consultant. And she's a research affiliate at Cambridge Asia, Central Asia Forum. Sinead, thanks for taking time to talk to us.
Thanks, Maureen, for having me. I'm delighted that you're interested in the topic.
We've spoken to a lot of people who, in the middle of a podcast, we'll have a 90-second rabbit hole, we'll go down about it, and we must actually cover that in more depth. And your report does just that. Do you want to give the listeners an overview of the report? First of all, maybe why, and then and what it's about, and we can have a conversation broader about that then, if that's okay.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Tony. So this report was commissioned by Oxfam and Trocra late last year. So I'll give you a little bit of context on it. So first, it was commissioned ahead of the UN Food Systems Summit that happened last month, a couple of weeks ago, on the 23rd of September. And the UN Food Systems Summit is a big deal because, first of all, it was the fifth such global summit relating to food that's happened in over 50 years. So it doesn't happen every day. But possibly more importantly, hopefully this summit is reflecting a global paradigm shift when it comes to how we approach food systems. And there are two new concepts that have emerged since last year in terms of what it means to achieve food security. And those two concepts are sustainability and agency. And so we don't need to go into sustainability too much here. That's fairly self-evident, but it is about the longer term nature of food systems and the effect they'll have on future generations. But the other concept, which I think is really important because it relates to power as well, is the concept of agency. And so agency refers to the capacity of individuals or groups to make their own decisions about what foods they eat, what foods they produce, how that food is produced and processed, and how it's distributed along the food systems. But really importantly, particularly for this report and what we looked at, it also refers to the ability to engage in the processes that shape food system policies and governance. So we'll maybe touch on that a little bit more later. But the rest of the context was that at the national level, Ireland, as you're both no doubt aware, produced this year its Food Vision 2030 strategy. So how it's going to deal with agri-food in Ireland over the next 10 years. And we really focused a lot on that in the analysis because it reflects a shift, hopefully, in how Ireland is going to approach food systems. Among the first, if not the first strategy in the world, which brings in the three dimensions of sustainability. So economic, social and environmental sustainability in the one place. And it really does reflect the complexity of the systems we're working in that, you know, it doesn't just look at the traditional agricultural components, but it's got strategies relating to forestry, broadband for rural revitalization, health, and really importantly, and this is not something I've ever seen in any other strategy in Ireland or elsewhere, it makes an attempt at least at connecting what Ireland does domestically and abroad. So how it engages with other countries as well. And the last point in terms of the context and the reason for commissioning the report is because there are these narratives that go around more at the global level where Ireland is considered already a leader when it comes to sustainable food systems. And I think that idea irks a lot of people, particularly in Ireland, when they hear that, you know, Ireland is leading the way. And so the UN Food and Agricultural Organization, which, as you can imagine, is a fairly prominent organization, institution in this field, sees Ireland as a leader in sustainable and climate sensitive agriculture. And other narratives suggest that Ireland is a leader when it comes to multi-stakeholder approaches. So there are reasons for those narratives. At the domestic level, I haven't seen those narratives. What we see in the Food Vision strategy and other narratives is that Ireland is striving to become a global leader. And so, as you know, at the domestic level, that is not the narrative we see in many of the circles. So the environmental pillar, for example, sees this Food Vision strategy as just as woefully inadequate, to quote them, to deal with the challenges we're facing. And in fact, is just perpetuating business as usual. So it was in that context that we were seeking to really dig in and figure out, if Ireland is to become a global leader, what are the opportunities and the challenges it's going to face, both domestically and globally, to really achieve that status of leadership? So that was the context in which it was developed.
Going to pause the podcast because we have big news. It's been a while since we've been back on the live scene, Martin, but we are going back. The Tortoise Shack is coming back in November to the Sugar Club in Dublin, which is a fabulous venue for a live podcast. The last time we were in the Sugar Club, we were actually the guests of Blind Boy, which was a phenomenal night. And we're hoping to do that with some of your favorite podcasts from across the Tortoise Shack. And if you are a member right now on patreon.com/tortoiseshack, the link is there. You can get in there, you can go in, and there's a quite hefty discount for our supporters, our members. So, you know, it's well worth signing up. But Martin, are you looking forward to getting back?
Tony, so do you remember the last time we were on stage?
Yeah.
I remember the last time on stage. And do you know what came out of that show? That's just really scary when you think about it. We talked about a coalition of Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael. We talked about
We talked about a Hung Dáil. And yeah. I said potentially a Hung Dáil. And I remember, I think it was it Breed Smith was there, or we asked everybody, because there was people from all the parties across the thing, and we asked them all for their predictions. And I think I'm wrong. It was Richard Boyd Barrett and Jack Chambers, your friend Jack Chambers of the Commemorations, was there. And then you said something, and this is me not to give you credit. You said, yeah, but then again, this thing that's coming in from China might change everything.
Yeah, that was January 2019, Tony. January 2000. God, how time flies. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting back into it. I'm looking forward to seeing the rest of the Tortoise Shack crew. Tony, really looking forward to seeing the rest of the Tortoise Shack crew.
All the podcasts that you enjoy will be on stage in Dublin Sugar Club in November. Patreon.com/tortoiseshack, well worth it. You know, like the discount alone is well worth signing up for, but also is the content. Support the independent media that you listen to, and it doesn't have to be us. It has to be, but please, because I can tell you, they're all struggling out there at the moment, and we're taking a risk going live now. But we genuinely think that these are the best shows that people will get the most fun, information, and a good night out at.
Patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Let you go back to your podcast now. How do we compare? I mean, the perception of us as a global leader, but obviously we're not a global leader. We're striving to be a global leader. How do we get away from that kind of sloganeering and actually get to a real in-depth look at what's going on?
Well, so the idea of Ireland as a leader is not completely untrue either. It depends on the angle from which you're looking at it. So Ireland does do really well in a lot of areas. And the issue with these global comparisons is that we're comparing to other countries, right? And so Ireland does actually do a lot more than many countries when it comes to engaging with its citizens for the development of agri-food strategies, for example. We have also had a shift in our agricultural production, which has been one from more traditional to more economically viable in some senses. So I think, first of all, it's important to recognize where Ireland is doing really well. And we do have reasons to be proud. Now, we do also, as you're both well aware, have plenty of reasons to not feel so proud, not least the biodiversity side of things. But moving away from sloganeering, and the sloganeering happens from every angle. It doesn't.
The sloganeering. We talked about this ourselves, Sinead, before we recorded, and the idea that, you know, there's and I'm going to frame this in today's context of everybody's fighting over Sláintecare. Sláintecare has been a very useful tool for politics on both sides. You know, we just say, what's your plan for gosh, we all support Sláintecare. And there's been a lot of that when it comes to food sustainability. They will say, and then they go on all sides, you will say, you know, well, just we have to meet the climate crisis, and we have to meet make food sustainable, and we have to address the biodiversity crisis. But when you try to look under the hood and say, what does that mean? They go, well, we just said we just said these things. Is that not enough? And, you know, it's frustrating on all sides if there's no detail there. And I suppose that's one of the parts that the report actually does show, that there are details, there are aspects that we can improve on, and aspects that we can think, when we think globally, where Ireland fits. But I'd be interested to get your take on that in terms of what it means in terms of that joined up thinking and where do we need to improve?
Yeah, so, you know, the urgency of the crises that we're facing, whether it's the biodiversity or the climate or you know, even other crises that come into, but won't get into the housing crisis today, but, you know, it is actually relevant. But the first thing I think is that we need to recognize the complexity of the food systems in which we're operating and making decisions for. And the fact that it's complex isn't just another slogan. It's a very real challenge when it comes to decision making. So we're looking at trade-offs, and those trade-offs really need to be considered when we're offering up solutions. So, for example, yes, we need to act really fast. We have no time to waste when it comes to climate change and the biodiversity crisis here. But at the same time, if we're moving forward with the principles of a just transition, for example, we need participative approaches, which means that we need to include and hear everyone's voices when it comes to, you know, those who are affected by food systems. But who's affected by food systems? Literally everybody, right? I mean, it can make us sick, or it can prevent us from being sick. It can heal us. Everybody along the chain is affected. And that's a trade-off there. That's a real challenge, because if we're to garner the voices and actually apply the interests of everybody, that's going to be a slow process, but we don't necessarily have time. So you're right. We did attempt to identify those actions that we can really move forward with in the report. And some of them are easier to put forward than others, like those, you know, those trade-offs that I just mentioned. But the point with that is that everybody coming to the table with solutions needs to really consider the effect that this is going to have, not just on the most vulnerable, but on everybody along the chain. So,
I want to make a point from the report, because it's a striking line, and I've read it a few times when you talk about that, and because we mentioned housing and how it's all impacted, and yes, absolutely, housing has. You know, we always say good housing policy is good climate policy. It's also it's impacted this way, and one of the lines is basically the right to adequate food cannot be reduced to the right not to starve. That's a pretty strong statement, and it goes to the heart of a lot of this when we talk about, you know, just here's someone's calorie intake as well, and we measure in those terms, but that's not what this is about. It's about actually food choices, having those varieties as well. It's all part of that, and that's why I suppose it's another part of the report of why we need to think, like, in a joined up way as opposed to in silos.
Yeah, Tony. So that Martin there mentioned earlier on, this narrative of feeding whatever number of people.
50 million.
Yeah, I mean, the figure changes depending on who or what you're talking about. It doesn't make any sense. And indeed, it's not the way the global food system works. It's certainly not Ireland that's going to feed the world. But really importantly is that what we're seeing, hopefully, hopefully in a substantive way, is this move away from the idea of feeding towards nourishing. And so we don't want to be considering the caloric intakes. We want to be considering food that's going to help people to thrive, essentially, you know, that will be preventing illness. I mean, at the moment, even economically, if you're to break it down, which speaks most to some of the decision makers, you know, malnutrition, and this is a conservative estimate, malnutrition costs 5% of the global GDP just through the hospital and care, you know. So we are literally making ourselves sick. And in Ireland, that it's we have the numbers there, the obesity rates, or even without looking at the outcomes, the inadequate intake of fresh fruit and veg, you know. And there's a few things that we can look at. So to get to the actual actions in terms of nutrition, and the concept of agency and decision making power of citizens, you know, the nutrition guidelines that we have are often overlooked. I don't think they even make mention of it in the Food Vision Strategy, and yet they're going to inform what some of our most vulnerable people are going to be eating in Ireland, in public institutions such as hospitals or food or schools even. And yet, when I looked up these guidelines, so last year, for example, the guidelines for 1 to 4 year olds, our youngest children, were released, and they were apparently based on international and national evidence. And I'm not a nutrition expert, so I don't have the science in it. But as a researcher, I want to know what is the evidence base that they're using. And it was impossible to find this. So when I dug in a little bit deeper and sent several emails, I got one response after several weeks with a list of names of Irish experts. But there was no clarity really on what the evidence base was. And the point is, in those guidelines, there are serious missed opportunities, which is a real generous way of putting it, when you have, you know, white sliced pan bread as a snack option for a 1 to 4 year old versus some other whole food, no matter what it is. It's not, you know, breadsticks were also featured on it. So I dug in a little bit deeper, and one of the things I found was that the school policy guidelines are largely based off the Northern Irish policy guidelines. So we should be looking elsewhere. We should be garnering international evidence on this and international expertise. But if we're basing it off the Northern Irish guidelines, that means essentially that we're using the British government's decision-making processes.
Which is very very Irish to do, yeah, anyway.
I'm just going to say, very Irish, Tony.
I think it's a really good point that we should, and it's something that, again, when we spoke previously, you spoke about taking the best international best practices and adopting them, and we talk about that. That's why Rory does Reboot Republic, and the whole basis of Reboot Republic was to find out who's doing this well, whether it's the Vienna model in social housing, and how do we steal that, in effect, if I want to be blunt about it. But can I ask another question on that, because you said Ireland does a lot of things very well, yet we often hear that Ireland is at risk of food insecurity. And you know, we hear like that, if, because we had that conversation, I know you listened to the podcast we did with Holly Cairns, and there was talk of that, you know, if we had a bad harvest on certain things, we aren't exactly set up to be as robust as maybe we'd like to be. How do those two things actually concurrently exist in the world, that we can actually be one of the world leaders, and we could also be 6 months away from having food insecurity?
Well, first of all, I would question the idea that we're food insecure. I mean, it, you know, on most measures, I'd like to understand what the foundation for that statement is, really, because on the vast majority of credible indexes and indicators, we're not food insecure. So yes, COVID has raised some issues around food supply chains, etc. But I don't I think it's misleading, and I think this is it's an unfortunate point to be discussing, because that's we have plenty of problems. And
I just wanted to put it to you, Sinead, on the air, because it's something that comes up time and time again.
Absolutely. I mean, these indices that come out and that suggest that Ireland is doing excellently have plenty of their own issues with them. They don't measure, say, environmental sustainability correctly. But the basic fact that we have access and availability of food is not a serious challenge that we should be seeking to address.
But the environmental one is.
The environmental one is, and also there is a point certainly to be made for more robust local supply chains. And as you mentioned as well in that podcast and just now, we are at risk certainly of climate-induced production challenges. So that is an issue, and that's an economic issue for those who are producing. But in terms of the Irish population being able to access, say, food, really we are amongst the most secure in the world. So I don't think that's something that we should be concerned about.
Should we be concerned? As you said, we're looking for best practice around the globe, but we should be concerned that we have adopted some of the worst practice, particularly in relation to, we'll say, dairy and beef, that we don't have the best practices from around the world, and that globalization is bringing down standards and not raising them.
I don't think we've taken the worst practices either when it comes to agricultural production. Yes, the policies and the incentives that came from those policies have certainly been detrimental. And so we haven't taken the best approach there. The globalization of food, the issue. So it's actually a really interesting time because we're kind of facing this standoff between the US approach and the European Union's approach. And so where Ireland is going to find itself in those two approaches is going to be really interesting. But the globalization of the food system per se is not necessarily the problem in itself. I think the commodification and the financialization of the food system is a serious issue. And we should be moving towards food as a public good, which Tara Kenny and Colin Sage from UCC have done some really excellent work on this. That's worth digging into. So we should be moving towards that approach. But at the moment, it's highly contentious, and Ireland has to work within this global food system that's going to cater for both its farmers and people in Ireland who need this economic basis and the global value chains. So it's a challenging situation. What I'm hoping is that we can, in the EU and in Ireland, move towards this Green Deal farm to fork approach rather than I'm not sure if either of you have heard some of the recent contentions raised by the US Secretary of Agriculture, but for the US, this EU approach is potentially going to bring the world to a famine because we're cutting pesticides, hopefully, you know, by half, and because we're moving away from this productivist paradigm. So to me, that's music to my ears, because the concept of efficiency is one of the things we need to change. Our view on. We need to move away from seeing the success of a food system as one that's, you know, producing high yields and low labor costs, to one where the food system is benefiting and again nourishing people, helping people to stay healthy. That's bolstering the environment, not just, you know, keeping it at a steady pace, but really bolstering the habitats and landscapes. For the US, that's not an option. We need to focus on technological solutions, and we need to continue with gene editing, and that's where the solutions lie. So I think I've gone on a bit of a rant.
No, I think that's really I find the idea that, because we've known, you know, when you'd want to talk about, say, we talk about the rise of neoliberalism, Reaganism, Thatcherism, whatever you want to refer to it, and the shrinking of the public sphere, and ultimately how a lot of things that used to be free became that were public services became private services. And this is where a lot, when you talk about the commodification of food there, that it really struck me that this is, you know, that this is another element of it that I hadn't quite kind of thought about. But when I do think about it in that scale, and Martin is, I think you're right, Martin, to mention globalization, because then it becomes a demand chain where, say, Irish dairy is then said, well, you know, actually it's real profitable if we supply X product to parts of Africa or parts of China, as opposed, you know, and maybe it's not the best thing to be doing environmentally. It's maybe it's not the best thing to be doing in terms of food chains. So, you know, how do we, are we even ready for some of these conversations, Sinead? Because, you know, I find people will, you know, you'll get people just who get their backs up immediately if you suggested some of those had to cut back in some of these things and maybe, you know, change direction.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is where I'm saying, I think, you know what, the best and the worst of times, we have a real opportunity here because we're part of the EU mostly, you know, and that they have a really ambitious, I mean, for all the flaws existent in it, the Green Deal and the Farm to Fork strategy and the biodiversity strategy, they are in theory, moving us away from that kind of approach. I think you're completely right. I mean, I don't think we're quite ready to, unfortunately, really implement the ideas of food as a public good because of the systems in which we're working. And again, you know, I wouldn't be a proponent of rapid transformative shifts, not on all accounts, at least. I think
Leave that up to us.
Oh, right.
What time's the revolution, Mark?
After the breakfast roll, Tony.
Yeah. But no, I just think, again, the scale of the crisis in terms of, say, climate facing us, and the scale of what then ultimately you end up with climate refugees, we end up with all of this, we will have to start thinking faster. We will have to start acting faster. And I think the report is, I'm going to, guys, read the report. It's there's a summary. It's only 13 pages that I'll add to the blog when you're listening to this podcast. You'll be able to click on the link and go in and have a look at just that version of it. It opened my eyes to some of the things that I've been thinking about incorrectly. I should say, but like. There's one point saying ensuring Ireland is using appropriate sustainability metrics. I always say on this podcast, and Martin kills me for repetition, but what gets measured gets done. And those, when we talk about the metrics that we should be looking at, can you just give me one idea how we should fix that as something that then we can actually have real proper data to be basing some of our plans off?
Yes, I'm delighted you brought that up because metrics is not something that's typically the most exciting for people to hear about, but it's really crucial. And it comes back to the earlier points. What we're measuring currently is how much yield we can get out, how much we can, you know, the maximum profit we can make for it, and the minimum labor costs. What we need to be measuring is the true cost of the food system, essentially. So first, the true cost in terms of integrating the costs to the environment, integrating the costs to our health. And on the other end of it, we need to be measuring the success of a food system based on its capacity to nourish and bolster both human and planetary health. So in a nutshell, that's it. But that's a lot more complicated, I think, than it sounds, and it's difficult to implement.
I'll give you the pushback that we get all the time. So I fight with maybe it's Ronan Lyons or maybe it's Seamus Coffey or you know, Ronan's due on the pod next week, so we'll have another fight. But he will tell me that, you know, these numbers will tell us we're doing great. And I'll say, but if you look at the actual deprivation levels, you know, if we're looking at, let's say we're talking housing or something and housing insecurity, you know, when you add the HAP numbers in there, Ronan, it shows a different thing. And it's very much that case of, I could tell you Ireland is the most progressive, has the least income inequality in the OECD. But I can also show you that we have the second worst, depending on what way I want to position it. And it's going to be really hard to get people to give up on the idea of, here's the blunt numbers, here's our calorific output, as we said at the beginning of this, to the idea of, like, are we actually nourishing and feeding people? And I think it's something that, like, this is the first time I think we've said anything like this on the podcast, Martin. Talking about people who, as in terms of what they're eating, what they're consuming, and how it supports the environment. And Sinead, maybe you are more revolutionary than you think.
Well, I think what Sinead said about moving away from the commodification of food, I think that's very revolutionary. I think that is very revolutionary, to look at it as more from a health aspect or from a societal aspect, rather than something you can just sell, you know, stack it high, sell it cheap. I think that's very revolutionary. It's also kind of anti-capitalist if you look at the neoliberal model that we operate in at the moment. But I think it is a revolutionary concept. I definitely do.
Can I, Sinead, just if there was a couple of things that you think people should take away or things we should act on now, is there a couple of things that you'd say, yeah, these are the main things that you'd like to people to first of all people to act on, be it states, be it quick wins or in the short term, things that could be termed short term wins, because the bean counters love short term wins.
Yes. So look, the focus of the report was very much what the Irish government can do. So that's what I'll respond to here. But as a caveat, I will say that we're not going to get to where we need to be without real collective action. And I think just to reiterate the point that every actor, every player in these conversations really would benefit from considering the complexity and the trade-offs when they're offering solutions. But certainly just a handful, maybe less of the key points that emerged from the report, the low-hanging fruit per se, where Ireland really can make strides. One of the first things we looked at is whether Ireland is putting its money where its mouth is. And so we looked at this domestically and globally. And keeping it short, but yes, absolutely go ahead and read the report if anybody is interested. The vast majority of Ireland's domestic subsidies to agriculture are going towards programs that have no particular agri-environmental nor social sustainability component to them. So we need to fix that. And in fairness, there are moves in that direction. Not enough is my point. So we have this pilot results-based payments program, which is being carried out across Ireland. And that's a real step. And that's moving from commitment to action. So that's a really positive step and a very tangible one, I would say, which where farmers are involved in the co-creation of solutions there. But we need to do more. We have 81% of our domestic agricultural subsidies that have absolutely no sustainability component attached to them. That needs to change. There's another thing that I tend to harp on about, but I think is important, that if we're going to be investing our money in places that have the most transformative shifts, where all three dimensions of sustainability are addressed, then we need to be doing that, and we need to be moving away from payments such as those to greyhound racing, where it's not only that we're not talking about the benefits, we're talking about detrimental effects here in terms of animal welfare and potentially others. And in that sense, we see the Department of Agriculture funding greyhound racing, which is curious to me, to say the least. But it's providing 50% more funding to greyhound racing than it is to horticultural development, to fruit and veg production in Ireland. And we definitely do need more of that production in Ireland. And 15% more to greyhound racing than to organic production. So the lack of coherence in that, to me, demonstrates a lack of prioritization of the right issues. So putting our money where our mouth is and really reassessing what we're funding and how we're funding it is really important. That would be one step. The same can be said globally. The majority of our payments when it comes to ODA aid money are not necessarily going towards sustainable projects. But really importantly, on the global scale, and this isn't something we've really touched on here, but the Irish government should and can be doing an awful lot more to work with the private sector that are engaging with countries, for example, in Africa, where most of the development cooperation happens. At the moment, there are no provisions to ensure human rights or environmental due diligence when Irish agribusiness is engaging with African countries and markets. And yet, the taxpayer money is supporting those agribusinesses through funds, for example, like the AADP, the African Agricultural Development Programme. So there are two areas where I think the Irish government could come in much stronger. Another area where I found was unfortunately just not robust enough is when it comes to regulation of the private sector for nutrition outcomes here. So there's a focus on reformulated foods in the Food Vision Strategy. And I find this really concerning. The focus on reformulated foods and a reliance on self-regulation by industry. And that blows my mind. I mean, we would
worked very well for our salmon farming, didn't
and
it?
Construction, it's gone. It's doing great.
No, but like we had right. We had Niall Sargent on about the salmon farming, and it's absolutely like there are people who have failed every test, but the government are still sitting on their hands because they're not in a position to actually tackle it. Even there's so limited in inspections, limited in enforcement, limited in what, and budgets are cut. And as you point out, if more money's going to greyhound racing, well, what does that tell you in terms of order of priority? I think it's a really important point. There was one point that you also made in the report, and this is unconscious of two men interviewing one woman, but there's also a huge gender disparity in some of this decision making process, and it's predominantly there's a lot of male participation in state boards and in the decision making process, and that's pointed out as well within the report, which I think is something else that Ireland has to come to terms with, because after 18 months of Neffet standing around and everybody looking at men in suits, we certainly have a role to travel there as well, Sinead.
Yeah, definitely, Tony. The generally speaking, the idea of representation is still inadequate, although we do go above and beyond EU basic regulations on that. But when it comes to women in particular, there has been progress. You know, it was there has been progress since the last agri-food strategy. There was a greater gender representation. but there was an article out, actually, it was today or yesterday in the Farmers Journal, where there's a call for, again, putting the money where the mouth is. So the Food Vision 2030 does have some provisions for, you know, ensuring appropriate representation and spaces for women in agriculture. And I mean, at every stage of the food chain, women, of course, are instrumental when it comes to every stage of it. What I would also like to see, though, when we're talking about this, is a greater understanding of what women actually want, because this conversation comes up quite regularly in every sphere. You know, we need greater gender representation or gender participation, or more gender balance participation rather. But I think we need to understand first what women want and whether or not they do want to be included in agriculture.
Well, would it not be better for us to turn around and say, well, you know, it's that the idea, sometimes the idea of participation is different, like whether it be in politics or anything. You know, we still see to this day, if we say, you know, what we should do is get more women in, but let's not look at the actual, it's like saying, look, we're playing this game here, these are the rules, and we'd like to invite you onto the team, but if you went in and said, well, actually I'd like to change some of the rules, well, no, we've asked you in and that's enough. And we do that quite a bit, and then we pat ourselves on the back for saying, well, we invited you in, so, you know,
don't deal within the system. No, yeah. That's exactly right. And I mean, I suppose it is also worth mentioning that beyond just, you know, getting greater representation of women in the field, there are already, and I think this is one of the points that maybe gets overlooked, but there are already a very large, very significant number of women who are working in agriculture, but that are invisible. In fact, it's the male-headed household kind of idea, nearly, where it's the men who receive the payments, the women don't, from subsidies. So, yeah, I mean, I certainly that would have been one of my points in the short term, is that we can do better when it comes to representation. We need to hear more from women. But we do also really urgently need to hear more from other sectors. I mean, there was an enormous imbalance in terms of private sector representation on the Food Vision Committee. You know, we had the environmental pillar representing 32, and they had requested, as from my understanding, additional spaces and weren't allocated. Forestry was represented by the timber sector. You know, SMEs were there in terms of a financial and a venture capital fund. I mean, these are not representatives of the Irish people in a balanced way at all.
Well, can I make a point? And again, for listeners' benefits, just recall that this week the government spent a lot of time relaunching the National Development Plan and the 165 billion over 10 years. And they launched 2040 a couple of years ago, and these were relaunches of a relaunch of a relaunch. But what was actually funny about it was, and I remember an auditor from one of the big four went in to work about this. And actually, the auditor, you know, he likes to think of himself as a bit woke, and he turned around and he said, "There's no sustainability in any of this 2040 plan." And they went, "Oh shit!" And they had to go back, and then they were like tagging on sustainability. And it's the same when we see these things. So yeah, it has been an afterthought in Ireland. It really has, and this is why it's built into the report you've done. The report you don't even talks about, you know, the TRIPS waiver and how things like that. So we have to think globally and locally, I suppose, in many regards, and I gotta say, you probably can have your cake and eat it, Sinead, if you do it correctly.
Well, I've never really understood that expression. Why would you want to have a cake if you can't eat it anyway? I mean, what's the point?
Well, listen, some of us are into self-flagellation. I won't go any further than that.
It is Ireland, I suppose.
Yeah.
Sinead, what's next?
What's next for
you? For you. This report is done. It's out there. The public can read it. People can go through it. What's next? What do you do next?
Well, I'm hoping to continue the conversations in Ireland for a start. So I'm hoping to continue working in different capacities with both Oxfam and Trocra moving forward to continue getting the messages that we put out there. And for me, I'd like to see some of these messages be communicated maybe a little bit more robustly to government and see what we can change there. For example, Irish and Green, you know, just to throw that in there. But also what I'd really like to do, and this is the researcher, I suppose, coming out in me, is to properly explore and distill some of the recommendations we've put in there, such as the National Food Body, an independent body that we're recommending. What would that really look like, and is it actually useful, or is a more local solution actually more useful? You know, like city councils. These things may need to happen at the local level, and this is one of the complexities of food systems. We need global action, but a lot of the work really does have to happen at the local level. So, I'd like to on this particular project. I'd really like to explore the feasibility and the value of some of these approaches.
Sinead Moles, thank you very much for coming on and having this conversation with us today. It's enlightening. We've learned more. Tony's going to post the report. I haven't read it as well as he has now. I've you know, scanned through, so I'll be reading it.
He read the emails I sent him. Yeah. That's what he did.
I'm going to read it because it is... really interesting, particularly where the world is at the moment. I think it's a very interesting subject and something we all need to be a bit more aware of. So thank you, Sinead. Thank you very much indeed for coming on and having this conversation with us today.
Thank you both very much. That was great.
Really appreciate it. We have Sinead Mercier coming actually later on the week, and we have an interesting conversation about Ireland's place on the UN Security Council. And again, going back to global hunger, actually, Sinead, and that's in the next day or two as well. So we'll be discussing a lot more. Tell people, because we don't have ads or sponsors. We're losing money out the door. So if you could tell people, and even if they throw us a couple of quid on the Patreon, it'd be brilliant. Thanks for the support, folks. We'll talk to you all very, very soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.